30. Later that night, after all of the wizards and the Brits had gone home, Gary sat on his ruined couch in the conversation pit of his blood-drenched living room, thinking about what he would do differently when he remodeled. He lifted his left leg, a prosthetic from the knee down made to look like a skeleton leg and foot. He noted that the entire sole of his foot, or the mass of tiny bones that made up the sole of his foot, was coated in blood. He watched it drip in thick drops from the heel bone and thought about setting up a macro so that the prosthetic foot would leave bloody footprints wherever he stepped. He heard the door to the vestibule open. He looked up and saw Hubert peeking around the door.
"Master, the lads and I would like to have a word. Is this a good time?"
"Sure, come on in. Have a seat," Hubert said.
"No, master, I think we'd prefer to stand."
The apprentices all filed in. Gary noticed that Hubert, who had been spared the direct blast from the fake blood hose, was still wearing his tuxedo. The rest of them had changed out of their work clothes and had put back on the filthy burlap rags they had worn when they first arrived on his doorstep. The apprentices stood at the opposite edge of the conversation pit, looking down at Gary, who remained seated in his blood-stained robe on his blood-stained couch, sitting in a blood-stained hole.
"What's up?"
Gary asked.
"Master,"
Hubert said,
"the lads and I have been talking. Today was the first time any of them fought anyone with magical weapons, or most of them fought anyone at all."
Gary nodded.
"Yeah, not surprised. What'd you think of it?"
"It was all quite a bit more hands-on than they expected, master. They had always pictured fights between wizards being more at a distance, using spells and charms and such to do the dirty work."
Gary nodded. "Yeah, that's the hope. It usually starts that way, but it doesn't last. It's like when two guys fight. It starts out as a cool-looking boxing match where they both stand up straight and dance around each other. But as soon as someone starts losing, they'll grab the other guy around the waist, pull them down to the floor, and start punching him in the crotch."
Hubert said,
"That's what we suspected, master. The thing is, fighting people in a rough, brutish manner is a career option that was already open to us. We wanted to learn wizarding to avoid all of that."
"I see.
So, we thank you for the opportunity, but we're gonna stop the training. Is that all right?"
Gary smiled.
"Yeah. That means I'll have to remodel this place on my own, but I'll manage."
One of the apprentices, a small, thin young man with a stooped posture and dried fake blood behind his ears, asked,
"Can we borrow the magical tools from time to time if we need them?"
Gary said,
"You know what? I don't think that'd be a good idea. It was okay here because you were under my supervision and we're miles from anybody who might be bothered by the screaming if things go wrong, but the tools are too powerful to just let you borrow. But if any of you ever need anything or just feel like coming by to say hello, feel free."
"We will, master. And I have a request."
"Sure, Hubert. What is it?"
"I was hoping that I could perhaps stay on as your butster."
"Butler. It's called a butler." "You'd want to do that without the magic training? You mean, just like a job?"
"Instead of going back to sifting dung?" "Yes, master."
"Well, of course, Hubert. I'd love to keep you on."
"Splendid, master!"
"And Hubert, you don't have to call me master anymore."
"No?"
"Of course not. Calling me sir will be fine."
Martin knocked on the front door to Philip's shop and waited. He knocked again and waited some more. It became clear to Martin that Philip either wasn't there or was not going to answer the door.
Makes sense, Martin thought. He probably wants to be alone.
Martin teleported past the door into Philip's shop. He ducked his head through the beaded curtain that led to the seance room and found it empty. He walked around the table to the door that led upstairs. He knocked, waited a tasteful amount of time, then teleported to the other side. The first thing Martin noticed was the sound of a quiet piano and an anguished voice promising someone that if they ever changed their mind, he'd be there. Martin walked up the steps to Philip's rec room. When his head rose over the level of the banister, he paused to look around. He saw Philip sitting on his white leather sofa, staring at the wall, motionless. Martin knocked on the wall. Philip didn't move. Martin knocked again. Still, Philip remained still. Martin said, "Okay. I know you're concentrating on your moping, but you're going to want to acknowledge me, because the next logical move is to knock on your forehead." Philip shook his head.
"If I wanted company, I'd have answered the door."
"I know. There's a difference between what you want and what you need." Martin picked up Philip's iPod and scrolled through the active playlist. "One More Night? Throwing It All Away? Against All Odds? Misunderstanding? Separate Lives? Jeez, did Phil Collins ever have a successful relationship? I wonder if it ever occurred to him that maybe he was the problem. Philip, it isn't healthy for you to be listening to this stuff right now."
He ended up setting the iPod to play In the Air Tonight, because it was at least a different kind of morose.
Martin looked at the bare patch of wall that had until recently held the enchanted door that led to Britt the Younger's home in Atlantis.
"I guess that's one bright side," Martin said. "All you had to do to move out of the place you shared with Britt was remove the doors. No cardboard boxes or piles of stuff thrown out on the lawn. Nice and clean."
Philip said,
"I wish it'd been that easy. No, I had a bunch of stuff strewn around Britt's place. I had to gather it all up. Nick followed me around the whole time. He said he knew I was prone to forgetting things."
"Not fun."
"No, not fun at all."
"Philip, I know you want to be alone, but I told everyone I'd check up on you."
"Everyone?"
"Yeah."
"Even Britt?"
"Yes. I mean, don't get the wrong idea. She didn't want me to check on you or ask me about you at all. She was just present when I said I was going to check in on you."
"And what did she say?"
"Nothing. She was busy. All she wants to talk about lately is how she's too busy to talk."
Philip shrugged. Martin slowly approached the couch.
"So that's what I'm doing. Checking up."
Philip shrugged again.
"So how are you?"
Philip didn't look at Martin, but took a deep breath and said,
"I've been thinking about this whole mess."
Martin sat down in a chair opposite the couch.
"Yes?"
"And I've come to a conclusion."
"Yes?"
"There has to be some way I can go back in time and put things right."
Martin nodded, reached into his robe, and pulled out an envelope.
"I wrote down my prediction of what you were going to say and sealed it to avoid tampering. Would you like to read it?"
"No."
"Because it says you think you can go back in time and fix this."
"I'm sure it does."
"You can't go back and fix this. You'll try and fail. You understand that, right?"
"You don't know that, Martin. You only predicted that because you talked to the future version of me who went back in time to try to fix things."
"Yeah," Martin said. "That doesn't mean I'm wrong. In fact, I got the idea for the prediction sealed in the envelope from him. He told me I did it, and now I have."
"But this time..."
"This time will be the same as last time, Philip, because this time is last time, or will be last time, and was the next time. Philip, you're going to try. All of us know that. You're going to do it alone. Again, all of us know that. And in the end, you're going to fail. Almost all of us know that. But you aren't going to try for another 2 months."
"Yes," Philip said. "I've got 2 months to plan." "You know, you could help. If you told me everything about the times you fought with me, the other me, future me, I could avoid the same mistakes I made."
Martin shook his head.
"I'm not going to tell you any of that. I want you to make those mistakes. They're how I caught you."
"If you're not going to help me, why'd you even bother to come here?"
"I am going to help you, just not in the way you think. Philip, I'm going to give you the thing you need more than anything else in the world."
"A more helpful best friend?"
"A project. Something to get your mind off of all of this. I'm cooking up something really cool, and I think it'll be right up your alley."